to include a disclaimer at the beginning of this episode. In this episode, I will be discussing some graphic theories, and there will be some adult language during the debunking part of this episode. I will announce it before I start that dialogue, so you will have the chance to skip over it. There will also be talk of sexual assault and sexual motive. All of this information was found through articles and forums online. None of the videos mentioned or the news audio played throughout is mine. None of the theories are mine. They are pure speculation, and most have no real basis. Take everything except the facts with a grain of salt. I am here to give all the information I can find. I am not pushing any theories or suspects forward. So it is February 17th as I am recording this, and we are going to talk about a case that just hit its third anniversary on last Thursday and Friday. This is obviously the Delphi murders case, and we're going to get really deep into it. But first, I got to do my little shameless self promo. If you don't follow us on Twitter, follow us at Great Unsolved, and on Instagram, it's at The Great Unsolved. I share a lot on there. I've been sharing a lot of my research on Twitter for this case, and I will continue to do so for other cases. Anyways, I'm going to keep this intro short, and we're going to get right into the case of the Delphi murders. So let's go over the main case info first. This is a case that happened on February 13th into the 14th of 2017. I'm going to cover from that time up until now. This is the case of the murder of Abigail Williams, 13 years old, and Liberty German, 14 years old. The girls had had a sleepover the night before at Liberty's home that she shares with her father and grandparents. They had this freedom due to a built-in snow day in their school system, therefore there was no school on Monday the 13th of February 2017. If you don't know what a built-in snow day is, basically, like, in the north here, schools plan for a certain amount of snow days. So if they say they think there's going to be like 3, they would add 3 extra days onto the year. And if none of these snow days got used, they would have to cut 3 days out of the year. So sometimes they do it all at the end of the year. Sometimes they shorten the day by like 10 minutes for the rest of the year. Or sometimes they'll just give you random days off. So this is one day that they had off. They decided to go to the Monon, I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm just going to say High Bridge Trail from now on. But they decide to go there and practice their photography skills while exploring nature. So now we're going to jump back to the morning of February 13th, 2017, to start off into the timeline. At 10 a.m., the girls woke up after having a late night from the sleepover the night before. They then had breakfast and ended up getting bored and started to play around with ideas on what they could go do today. Abby and Libby decided to ask Libby's grandmother, Becky Patty, if they could go hike on High Bridge Trail. This is because Kelsey, Libby's older sister, and Libby had gone there before to walk around and do some geocaching. This was not a huge nature reserve that tons of people are always at. I know where I live, our nature parks and trails are always full of people and bustling. Like, you aren't alone. It's right out in public, and there's normally a lot of friends and family. And it's just, there's a lot of people around. This was not like that, though. It wasn't a huge nature reserve that tons of people were always at. It was more secluded. It seemed there were other people, but it is unknown if Libby and Abby actually ran into any of these people or these people saw them that day. There are plenty of YouTube videos that show the area around this bridge, and while it's not like completely secluded, it is fairly secluded. I know I didn't really know like how secluded it was. So I looked up some videos, and it's like really any woodsy nature reserve that doesn't get like a ton of traffic. You aren't by a neighborhood, you aren't really by a road, you're just on trails, but it's not secluded in the fact that like no one is close at all. Like there's houses across the high bridge, and you know, it's not like you're in the middle of nowhere. It was perfect for a serene walk, but now I assume it's much more scary for the people of Delphi, Indiana. I know when I was younger and when I was in high school, I think I mentioned this on the last episode of the Delphi murders that I went over, but we would go to this park, and from the park, if you followed the railroad tracks, maybe like a mile, you would hit this old railroad bridge, and under it there was a creek, and there was just walls of graffiti, and we would go there to like take pictures and stuff because we thought it was cool. But other than the train going overhead once every hour, we were the only people out there. It was not like an actual path. It was kind of hard to get to, and it was secluded. And there were times like we'd go there and it looked like people had killed animals there or something along those lines. And I never really worried about it then, but now after digging so deeply into this case, I have no idea what I was thinking. But that's kind of how it goes with most people who were a little irresponsible as kids. So Becky, Libby's grandmother, basically said that if they could find a ride there and back, then they could go. Abby did not ask her mother about going, probably due to just not having her mother there, so she didn't worry about it. But Abby's mother, Anna, stated she probably would have allowed Abby to go with Libby because Abby had been around that area before. Also, there was really no reason not to allow these two girls to go because they were fairly responsible young women, so why not just let them go have fun on their own? This is a point in the timeline where the first sightings of BG, also known as Bridge Guy, which is the name given to the suspect that is the man in the recordings from Libby's phone. Anyways, this is about the time the first sightings of BG are reported. This is before the girls even got to the area. At 12:30 p.m., a woman walking her dogs at the southeast end of the bridge, we're talking about High Bridge here, said she had a conversation with BG. Another report says this woman was not walking her dogs, but saw BG walking around like her neighborhood and went to approach him in their car about 1/4 mile south of the High Bridge. When she approached him, he left on foot. This is where the second sketch of the suspect came from. So at 1:23 p.m., Derek German, Libby's father, leaves on an errand for his mother, Becky. At 1:26 to about 1:30 p.m., there is a teenage female witness with friends near Freedom Bridge. Now, I know I've been talking about High Bridge. High Bridge is the railroad bridge that's abandoned, it's kind of worn down, you're not supposed to walk on it. Freedom Bridge is a more widely used bridge. I think it was one constructed solely like for a walking path in between trails or something along those lines. It was a lot less secluded. Anyways, this girl sees BG and says hello, but BG just kind of gives her a creepy look. She stated it was like a frightening look. Her description of him was about 5'6", 5'7", and apparently she described him pretty well without seeing the video or pictures like from Libby's phone first. So this is one of the witnesses that formed the first sketch. Around 1:30 p.m., after first saying no to Libby and Abby, Kelsey decides that she'll take them to the Monon High Bridge trail if they can get a ride home. There are conflicting reports on this all over the internet. Some state that the girls had asked about a week before they went, to go to the bridge, and that Kelsey had said no all week. If this scenario was true, then it would be possible that BG had overheard them sometime in the week before and planned the killing, planned the victims. However, in Kelsey Germain's Debunking Myths video, she states that they had other ideas, basically, on what to do that day, but did not ask Kelsey about taking them to the trail until that morning. So it does not seem as if it was a planned attack against the girls. In between 1:38 and 1:39 p.m., Libby calls her father, Derek, to ask if he could pick them up later, and he agrees. Kelsey then leaves them off at the trails around the same time after confirming they had a ride home. There are also discrepancies on this, stating that the girls didn't call Derek until after Kelsey left, but Kelsey is adamant she would never leave the girls off without knowing they had a ride home. And honestly, I believe her. Derek agreed to pick up the girls around 3 or 3:30 p.m. and stated he would call when he was close to the area. In between 1:45 and 2:07 p.m., a lot of places say it was at 2:07 p.m., but I believe that's the time the Snapchat was opened, not the time it was sent. Anyway, Libby posted a photo of Abby on her Snapchat. Abby was standing on the old railroad bridge. Libby also posted a photo of just the bridge. Around this time, it seems that Abby and Libby noticed a man near them and started talking about him. Although I don't believe there are any recordings of this, it is stated that they had been talking and one of them asked if the man was still following them or something along their lines. In between 2:15 and 2:30 p.m., Libby and Abby were off the southeast end of the bridge and caught that famous video of BG walking towards the girls. We will go over an analysis of the video and pictures later. So when this video was taken, BG was about 65 feet from the south end where Libby and Abby were when the video was caught. Around 2:30 is when the audio recording of the man saying, "Guys, down the hill," was recorded. We'll also talk more about that later. In between 2:30 and 2:45 is the area in which people believed they were murdered. At 2:45 p.m., Cheyenne Makisha Engels entered the trail, and around 3 p.m., she took a picture standing on the south end of the bridge. In this picture, there is no one else, and she states she did not hear or see anything at this time. I believe this is why it is assumed the murders happened before 2:45, because if you're in the silent woods, you would most likely hear a struggle or something along those lines going on. Cheyenne later said this, quote, "I even walked all the way across the bridge and back. I only saw a guy when I first got there, and another couple of guys once I got on the bridge. I didn't see the girls at all. I also didn't take the trail that leads to the right. I only took the trail that led to the bridge." End quote. In between 3 and 3:15, there was a male and female witness walking along the 501 trail towards the High Bridge, and BG passed them heading towards Freedom Bridge. It was reported that he was wearing no hoodie at this time, and since they were having an argument, the male and female witness were having an argument, the female did not see BG. This is the second witness that contributed to the first sketch. At 3:11 p.m., Derek placed his first call to Libby's phone to state that he is almost at the agreed pickup place. She did not pick up. At 3:13 p.m., Derek called again because he is now at the agreed pickup place. Still no answer, so he then sent a text. At 3:15 p.m., Derek gets out of his car to walk the trails and look for the girls. He's thinking maybe they're not checking their phones, maybe the phones died, something along those lines. Around 3:20 p.m., Derek ran into Dave McCain, also known as the flannel shirt guy, who is not a suspect. He was heading west on the 501 coming from the bridge and states he has not seen the girls. He said there was a couple by the bridge, but no girls. Because of this, Derek chooses to take the 505 trail that does not lead to the bridge, since the girls may have gone that way. In between 3:24 and 3:32, Derek calls Libby's phone, and there are no answers either time. At 3:33, Derek finally called Becky Patty to see if the girls maybe walked home or got home a different way, but they did not. At 3:34 p.m., Derek calls his sister Tara and leaves a message asking if she had talked to the girls. At 3:35 p.m., Derek runs into Dave again as he is walking to Freedom Bridge. At 3:57 p.m., Derek calls Libby once again with no answer. He then proceeds to call Becky again, and Becky calls Kelsey. Kelsey let it go to voicemail the first time, but answers the second time, and she then learns that the girls are essentially missing and states she hasn't heard from them. At this point, Kelsey decides she's going to call into work and go help look for the girls. At 4:17 p.m., Becky tries to call Libby and gets no response. She then calls many of the girls' friends in order to see if they ended up at someone else's home. They had not. At 4:19 p.m., Becky and Tara decide to go to the trails and help look for the girls. At 4:20 p.m., Becky calls her husband Mike and tells him about the girls. He says he's gonna leave work right away, and he'll be there in about 30 minutes. At 4:30 p.m., Becky arrives at the trails where Derek, Tara, and their brother Cody are already there. Kelsey arrives right after her. At this time, Becky calls AT&T to see if they can track Libby's phone, but she does not have Find My Phone installed. Therefore, they cannot. Kelsey and Cody cross the bridge in order to go from home to home and look for the girls. They find nothing here. Around this time, Becky also tries to reach Anna, who is Abby's mother, but she does not answer, so Becky starts driving to her job. On the way there, Anna calls back. Now Anna learns that Abby and Libby are missing, and Anna leaves work and heads to the sheriff's station. At 5 p.m., Mike Patty, which is Libby's grandfather, shows up and joins the search. He tries to call Libby, but now all calls are going straight to voicemail, which either means her phone was purposely turned off or it had died. 5:20 p.m. is when Mike Patty reports the girls missing to police. The first officer is reported to have arrived around 5:25 p.m. And at 5:30, Kelsey decides to go into work for a bit, but right after she gets in, she is called to come back to the police station. Now, at this point, no one's really thinking that the girls are in like a huge amount of danger. So that's why Kelsey decides to go to work, and that's why things are going this way. Everyone thinks, oh, they're gonna show up, they just got lost, or maybe one of them got hurt and the other one didn't want to leave her. Something along those lines. No harm, no foul yet. At 6 p.m., volunteers and law enforcement start an official search. But at 6:20 p.m., the sun sets. I don't know what I was gonna say after that. Sorry. In between 7 and 8, there was talk about stopping the search, but that did not happen until 11:45 p.m. The Carroll County Sheriff states that there was no reason to believe these girls are in danger and believes they are with friends, so searches will start again in the morning. This is something that is quite common. Police will often call off searches as it gets dark so that people in the search parties do not get hurt. This was not uncommon for really any case, especially in the middle of winter. It does seem odd to me, though, that the county sheriff stated the girls were with their friends and they were probably fine. Because by this point, I feel like there was obviously something wrong. It had been basically confirmed that these girls were not with friends, and it was February. So exposure is a huge risk here. It was not safe to assume these girls were okay, and obviously we learned that later in the case. Kelsey stated in her video that really no one stopped searching. So many people were still with the family in the woods that night looking for the girls. So moving on to the timeline of Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. At 7:40 a.m. is the sunrise, and at 8:15 a.m. searches start again. Around 9 a.m., divers and canine units were brought in. And that seemed odd to me as well, because if police assume that the girls were okay last night, why are they bringing in these services, especially the dive teams? At 12 p.m., a volunteer made the unfortunate discovery of the bodies of Libby and Abby. These bodies were found on Logan property, I believe that is the man's last name, on the north side of Deer Creek. Here is a quote of basically what happened. So Kelsey was searching on a path immediately below the high bridge. Another search party near the river found a shoe. They yelled up to Kelsey asking about the type of shoe they found. I believe it was a black Nike, and they were asking whether it belonged to one of the girls. It was a shoe type, not color, as some reports indicate. Kelsey yelled back that it was Libby's shoe. At that point, one member of the party where the shoe had been found saw two deer. He used his phone to zoom in on the deer and shifted his view angle down a little bit from the deer and saw the bodies. Apparently, some of the girls' clothing was also found in the river, but that is unconfirmed. At 12:39 p.m., news outlets are starting to ask why Amber Alerts were not issued for Abby and Libby when they were found to be missing. At 1 p.m., searches changed to evidence recovery. So there was most likely multiple crime scenes due to them starting on the bridge and ending up across the river. But there had been so many people walking through and around possible crime scenes in the woods, so there may be a lot of evidence that was unusable or pretty much tampered with. At 1:05 p.m., news outlets are reporting on two bodies being found, but there's no identification yet. At 2 p.m., police have press conferences confirming two bodies have been found, but still no identification. Delphi School superintendent states that it was his understanding the bodies were those of Libby and Abby, and says grief counselors will be available. We will listen to that little bit right here.
With me this morning, I know this has been such a terrible 24 hours for you. How are you holding up?
I'm holding up fine. Our thoughts and prayers go with the families and the rescuers and the searchers. That's in our thoughts right now the most. As we start today, our first priority is getting our schools opened up, getting our students to school safely, and making sure that any service needed is there for them as they come in, students and staff.
Around 4:32 p.m., Sergeant Kim Riley stated they were going home and the autopsy for the two bodies was scheduled for 8 a.m. On Wednesday, February 15th, 2017, at 8 a.m., the autopsies are performed in Terre Haute. At 12 p.m., the Carroll County Sheriff's Department and State Police had a joint news conference and confirmed that the bodies were those of Abby and Libby. Around 7 p.m., the first photo of BG was released. At this point, the police were saying he's not a suspect, but they would like to talk with him. on Thursday, February 16th, 2017. At 7:45 p.m., state police serve a search warrant at the Maxwell home. Supposedly, a reliable source stated that Libby had been talking to Logan Maxwell on social media, but no arrests were made at this time. So now we're going to skip forward to the press conference on February 22nd, 2019.
Escape during these periods of time, so I've only had a couple of other situations in my lifetime. I'm able to stand before you and say that. Why Libby? Why Abby? Why Delphi? Why Carroll County? Why the region? Why the state? Why even in the nation? I say that because this is a classic example and a clear example that evil lives amongst us. To the family, to the community, the region, the state, as a leader of the Indiana State Police, I say I am so very sorry. See, this isn't like TV. There's a perception that this can be solved very quickly. Anything that we do can be solved very quickly, but this is a testament that it can't, and we need you. We've needed you since last week. We need you today, and we need you tomorrow. And likely, we'll need the media all across this nation. So from a simple guy like me to you, I say thank you. Libby and Abby need you. Please do not rationalize tips away. Rationalize what you think that might not be important away. By thinking he would never do that to another human being. Or think, what I know doesn't matter. Let folks like the people that are standing behind me with such incredible passion and commitment and dedication to this profession make that determination.
We do have some new information for you today. It's in the form of an audio file from the cell phone that Liberty German had with her at the time. We're not going to play everything that we have, but Liberty had the presence of mind to turn on her video camera. Again, we're not going to be able to share everything with you, but we are going to share this audio clip with you momentarily with the hope that somebody will recognize this voice. And I want to be very clear that what you're about to hear is just four short words. Excuse me, three words. Down the hill. You're going to hear this played four times. The audio quality is not superb, but there's enough there that somebody could recognize this person's voice. And as Superintendent Carter said, not to rationalize away. If you hear this today and you think, my God, that sounds like fill in the blank, call us. Make an anonymous tip. Tell us who you think it is. Let us investigate it. If it's not the right person, they'll just be out a little bit of time and they'll be cleared and they can go on and they'll never know that you called. But you may tell us who the right person was. And you could be the person that helps us to solve this horrible crime. Micah, play the clip, please. Could you play it one more time?
Now I am going to play the audio from the press conference a year after the murder.
Science is going to help us. Investigative technique is going to help us. The incredibly committed personnel will help us. But the final puzzle, piece to this puzzle, is going to be somebody thinking that is not right. I know a person that I don't think he's capable of that, but I'm going to report it and then let us vet it. What we don't want people to do is to get online and start comparing photographs of people that they think are involved with the photo that we have on the high bridge, and then putting a photo of somebody that they think next to him. Because imagine what happens to that individual if he's not the one. So it's not our goal. We don't want to do that to an individual. Let us vet him. Let us vet the information. Let us vet the photograph and work towards a successful conclusion. We cannot allow this person to coexist. What we don't want people to do is to get online and start comparing photographs of people that they think are involved with the photo that we have on the high bridge, and then putting a photo of somebody that they think next to him. Because imagine what happens to that individual.
And now we are going to play the press conference from 2019. In this press conference is when the sketch changed, and many people became very concerned with this. But law enforcement states that this is now the primary sketch. If you've seen the sketches, this is the one of the man without the hat or the beard, and he looks quite a bit younger. Many believed that now they had been looking for the wrong person for 2 years, though, and that was very concerning to the community. This new sketch comes from the first witness, the woman walking her dogs. It is so different from the first sketch, but in this press conference, they do state that they changed their investigative style, and this means they could have gotten new information as well. It could also be that they believe the suspect is younger. So these two sketches could possibly be the same person, but he is now younger than they thought. At this time, the video was also released, and the audio with the word guys in it. This video could help by identifying a unique gait or a unique walk to someone, and the recording shows more of a Midwestern type of talk now.
Information is being released today is the result of literally thousands and thousands of hours of extraordinary investigative efforts by Delphi, Carroll County, the FBI, the Indiana State Police, and countless other agencies. After you hear what we're going to release today, I'm going to ask for your continued support, your continued understanding, your empathy and compassion. Please keep in mind, the person talking is one person and is the person on the bridge with the girls. This is not two different people speaking. Please listen to it very, very carefully. We are also releasing video recovered from Libby's phone. This video has never before been previously released. The video shows a suspect walking on the bridge. When you see the video, watch the person's mannerisms as they walk. Watch the mannerisms as he walks. Do you recognize the mannerisms as being someone that you might know? Remember, he is walking on the former railroad bridge. Because of the deteriorated condition of the bridge, the suspect is not walking naturally due to the spacing between the tiles. We try so hard to understand how a person could do something like this to two children. I recently watched a movie called The Shack. And there's also a book that talks so well about evil, about death, and about eternity to the murderer. During the course of this investigation, we have concluded the first sketch released will become secondary as of today. The result of the new information and intelligence over time leads us to believe the sketch, which you will see shortly, is the person responsible for the murders of these two little girls.
We likely have interviewed you or someone close to you. We know that this is about power to you. And you want to know what we know. And one day, you will. A question to you. What will those closest to you think of when they find out that you brutally murdered two little girls? Two children. Only a coward would do such a thing. We are confident that you have told someone what you have done. Or at the very least, they know because of how different you are since the murders.
In this final press conference, well, not final, but I guess most recent, he mentions the movie The Shack, seemingly out of nowhere, and it has gained a lot of speculation. Here is a summary of the movie plot. In The Shack, the main character grew up abused, had a crisis of faith, and has to decide if he's on the side of good or evil. A sociopathic narcissist wants to be perceived as a hero, but has a hollow sense of self and minimal empathy. He wants to be perceived as good, like in a movie. He may not at his core understand how to be good, but he can understand how to be perceived as good, likely by embracing the church. He intellectually understands good Christians don't murder girls, so his actions are incongruent with his self-perception. He needs to decide, and he, like the main character in the film, is in power and in control of his decision. The implication is that he can redeem himself in the eyes of those who matter most, his family, the general public, the media, by doing the right thing, showing he has that scrap of conscience and isn't the coward by confessing. So that was kind of partially a summary and partially how this person on Reddit sees it connect with the case. Many people believe he was just saying this off the top of his head, but when you listen or view this press conference, there are a few things that stick out that make me think this part about the Shack was completely scripted. If you are watching the press conference, you can see him reference his papers quite a bit. If you are listening, you can tell that there were really no words or time wasted in his speech. He knew what he was going to say, and it seemed like there was a purpose for all of it. Throughout this case, law enforcement has been very selective about the information they release. They have been planning it out as they go, but they have been doing so very carefully. I believe they have a suspect in this case, and this was a specific call or reference to BG. Other than that, it would really make no sense to be put in this case. He starts his talk about it and stops it so quickly. Here, let's listen to that part again.
We try so hard to understand how a person could do something like this to two children. I recently watched a movie called The Shack. And there's also a book that talks so well about evil, about death, and about eternity to the murderer.
Now I'm going to go over some pieces of Kelsey German's debunking video. This is from a video done by Kelsey German, and this is not my own. So she states, Libby's phone did ping on multiple cell towers, but that does not mean she was moving. Since the town was so small, it's almost impossible to be in one spot and not have multiple towers ping. Kelsey stated, you could cross the house and be on another one. Also, no one refused a lie detector test. The family has been very cooperative, and the family works really well with law enforcement. Cody, Libby and Kelsey's uncle, his post on social media was a song. It was not about the case. It was a joke between him and a friend, but it had nothing to do with the case. It was a very inappropriate song, but nothing really, I guess, harmful because it was just a song. Cody was confirmed with an alibi, and he is not a suspect. I found screenshots of the exchange between Cody and his friends that I believe she is talking about. The exchange went like this. Friend, bro, she's 14 though. Oh, by the way, this is where I say a few things in, I guess you could say, adult language. So if you don't want to hear that, just skip like 30 seconds and it'll be over. So friend, bro, she's 14 though. Cody, it's hard to find that baby is mine. I only nutted in her one time. Friend number two, but she know how to tweak it though. First friend, her daddy said to have her home by 10. Cody, I said, but I'm not trying to be her friend. I'm just really trying to get it in. So that was the exchange between Cody and the friends that has had so much speculation when really it's just a song. And I think it's obvious it's just a song because it rhymes and, you know, all that stuff. Anyways, next, Kelsey discussed the Renner video. This was the first one she did alone, and she was nervous and just kept on talking. She may have made some confusing statements, but they are not true. One confusing statement she said she made was stating that there was 20 kids there when she dropped the girls off. What she meant was that there were about 20 people there throughout the day, but not when she dropped them off. Now we're going to jump into the picture slash video slash recording analysis. This is a combination of a video done by Michael Katt on YouTube. He does a lot of informative Delphi murder videos, and this is also some of my own speculation. So I recently watched a YouTube video done by Michael Katt. He lives around the area and has some very informative points. He looked at the still pictures and analyzed them in this video. On the right leg of BG, you can see a brown thing near the top of the coat, or near the bottom of the coat, near the top of the pants. Most believe it is a fanny pack, and that seems like the most probable thing. This fanny pack could be holding a kill kit or a weapon of some kind. On the left leg near the hip, it almost looks as if there's a holster there. This does kind of seem odd for someone to have out in the open on a hiking trail, so it could be a phone clip or just a blur in the video. But some people do believe it was a holster. Michael also points out a flat part in the man's upper left leg. He states it could be a tablet and compares it to a picture of a tablet in a pocket. I cannot understand why a tablet would be needed in the woods. I think it is more likely a notebook or something along those lines. Some killers or criminals like to catalog their crimes in some way, so maybe this man was doing just this. He likely had been stalking these woods for days or weeks and probably had a lot of downtime to observe and record things about the area, about his plan, etc. Michael continues by stating that this man could either be wearing a hat or it could just be his hair. In different pictures, it looks differently. I believe that he was wearing a hat based on witness accounts, and also because he would just want to be hidden as much as possible. Lastly, Michael states that it looks like the man is wearing a hoodie that is bunched up. It seems odd that this man would feel the need to wear a hoodie and jacket on this unusually nice day when even teen girls were wearing only sweaters. So it kind of seems to me like he was trying to layer his clothing to obstruct what his body may look like and somewhat hide his. Now we are going to jump into the profiling and suspects. This is a profile of my own mind along with the knowledge from the police and articles on the case, but these suspects are not my own. These are suspects from articles and theories online. The police state that their suspect is a white male with reddish-brown hair, 5'6" to 5'10", 160 to 220 pounds, and aged 18 to 40. This was a person who had stalked this area for a long time, therefore it was most likely someone local. He most likely lived in the area for a while before the murders and possibly after. He could still be in the area today. People are being urged to look at people who live in the community or moved shortly after the murders. He was most likely someone who people had seen on the trail before because he had to know the area to plan his crime. This man was being organized in how he was planning his crime. However, he was not organized in his victim selection. He was just waiting for opportunity. He was planning his fantasy crime through these weeks or months. He probably sat in waiting for weeks before this case, somewhere hidden where he could see the trail. On this day, he sat and waited to make sure the girls were alone and took this one opportunity. He could have had a kill kit on him or have been hiding weapons in his layered clothing and went after the girls. The plan could have been very different, but it may not have gone as planned when he actually executed it. He did have a plan on how to control people, his getaway route, his area to kill, so that he was not seen. This seems like he was either a career criminal and maybe had just never been caught, or had advanced knowledge of crime and or forensics. He knew he had to get this done efficiently without being seen and without being noticed. He was seen by less than 5 people that day. No one even saw or heard the crime. There supposedly is DNA, but not enough to incriminate him. It is known that there is DNA, but the DNA is from multiple people, so it is not very helpful in this case. Police would have to have DNA from people to rule them out in order to get the singular killer's DNA. Much of this touch DNA could also be from other kids the girls went to school with, or friends and family. This guy knew what he was doing. There was also most likely a sexual motive for him, since in killing teenage girls there is no monetary gain, and it can't really be a passion killing when you are randomly selecting people. Our idea of a sexual motive may not be the same as his. Rape or normal sexual assault is not necessary. This man could have gotten a sexual feeling from simply the act of scaring the girls or some specific thing in the crime, and that could be the sexual motive for him. There has never been a police-released info that there was sexual assault or sexual motive, but they have looked into a few pedophiles and rapists, so it is assumed by many people. Now we are going to get into more specific suspects, but first I want to clarify some false info that people are getting online. The LaFons are not suspects. I see it so much where people are like, what about Scott LaFon? What about Aaron LaFon? Wasn't he working on like the benches that day or something? No. This is false information. This idea comes from a YouTube personality named Derek Godsey, also known as Dexter the Bounty Hunter. He has been called out by Kelsey Germain. He has been called out by so many people for spreading false information, and many people have asked him to stop. I am not one to call people out, but this guy needs to stop. He needs to stop what he is doing, as it is harmful to the case and to those that are close to the case. Derek Godsey is, well, to put it nicely, he's just not in his right mind. He believes he solved the D.B. Cooper case single-handedly by tricking people on Facebook and watching videos. Derek Godsey has so many videos that are just slide pictures, which many have been edited by him or her, I guess, I don't know, to incriminate others. Many of these pictures are not real. So when you see some of the text message pictures he shares, those are edited. And these videos have rap music and such in the background, and they only point towards the LaFons. He kind of locked on to this theory and just went with it. Derek Godsey is someone who has multiple Reddit and Twitter accounts because he gets blocked or banned and doesn't want to stop spreading lies and heckling people. Derek Godsey is sharing side-by-side comparisons with the sketches, and this is very harmful to the case. No one should do this. If you have someone you think looks like this sketch, give a tip to police. Do not share it on social media because that could hurt an innocent person.
What we don't want people to do is to get online and start comparing photographs of people that they think are involved with the photo that we have on the high bridge, and then putting a photo of somebody that they think next to him. Because imagine what happens to that individual.
I'm smarter, prettier, and tougher than all of you trash, skank, bitches. There are no credible sources that state the LaFons as suspects, so please do not listen to any of this libel or slander against the LaFons. Now, let's jump into real suspects. So, Christopher Moore. Christopher Moore is a professor, I believe, and he has his degree in archaeology, and he does a lot of work around Delphi because he teaches at a college near there. A week after the girls' deaths, he and some students broke ground on a site not far from Freedom Bridge, which Freedom Bridge is on the same trail as High Bridge, but it's just like down further. So before you start to dig, it takes a long time to survey the area and get everything together. So there's a high chance he was in the area when the girls went missing and were killed. Now, I don't have a lot to say about him, but he will be linked to a specific theory I will go over after finishing the suspects. Now we have Daniel Nations. He is a registered sex offender from Indiana. In September of 2017, he was threatening people with a hatchet on trails in Woodland Park, Colorado. Someone riding a bike was also fatally shot during this time on the trail. Police suspect Nations for this. Police said they were not at liberty to disclose the similarities in the case. In early February 2018, police did state that Daniel Nations was no longer a suspect or person of interest in this case. Next is Thomas Bruce. He was formerly a pastor, and he wore similar clothes as Bridge Guy when going into a Christian bookstore in St. Louis. I don't know why I said it that way. Once inside, he ordered two women to the back room at gunpoint, sexually assaulted them, and killed one. This was a crime committed in broad daylight, just like the girls' murders. He has since been charged with 17 felony counts related to the St. Louis crime. Some things in these cases are similar, which is why he is a person of interest, besides matching the description. The next suspect is Charles Eldridge. He was arrested on January 8, 2019, for child molestation and child solicitation. Police in another county alerted the FBI when they arrested this man, due to him resembling the first sketch. There has not been a whole lot of information on the suspect since. People who know him have stated this. Quote, he would always go out, and he wasn't hunting. He would go into the woods, and what he'd do, we don't know. I never let any of the kids go with him. I never trusted. End quote. And So the next suspect is Paul Etter. There was a tip received in July of 2019, and because of this tip, Paul became a suspect. He was wanted for the kidnapping and rape of a 26-year-old woman in another county. Paul met up with police 5 days after this kidnapping and rape, and participated in a 5-hour standoff with them, which ended with him killing himself. On the 15th of February 2017, right after the murders, Paul commented on a post of Libby's cousin saying, quote, the sheriff suggested that things have been happening in the Delphi area the last few months. Any idea what he is referring to? End quote. They did obtain his DNA and autopsy report, but nothing has really come out from it. Here's our second to last suspect, Micah Hudson. I can't find like a ton online about this theory of the suspect, but here's what I have. Micah is supposedly a pastor at a church in Delphi. One of the girls attended his church sometimes. Micah does fit the description and looks somewhat like the sketches. He started to grow a beard and subtly change his appearance right after the murders happened, which is kind of suspicious. Again, not much on this subject, but I have heard about him. It would also relate to the reference to the movie The Shack, because that movie deals with faith a lot, and Micah is a pastor. So maybe the police were telling him, you know, you need to confess or something along those lines. Our last suspect is John Miller. He was wanted for the 1988 murder of April Tinsley. April was abducted from her neighborhood when she was only 8 years old. There was DNA left, but there was no match for years. These are just some of the similarities between the cases. Other than that, there's not much on the suspect, and personally, I don't believe he looks like the sketches at all, but we have to take sketches with a grain of salt as well. Now, for the last part of this episode, we are going to go into a few theories. I don't have much on any of these theories, but I wanted to share the basis of them at least. So the first theory is the catfish theory. Some have the belief that Abby and Libby were talking to someone online and had gone to meet them at the bridge that day. However, there's really no record of this, and it wouldn't make sense to me. Why would they record someone they were set to meet, and why? Like, they just don't seem like the type of girls to do this. There was a report of law enforcement telling the community to, like, track or check what their kids are doing online, and I think this is where this theory came from. A lot of people thought they were telling them that because of the murders, but honestly, that's just something you should do anyway. The next theory is the geocaching theory. I had recently just heard about this, but this is a theory that relates to Christopher Moore. For those that don't know, geocaching is an outdoor recreational activity in which participants use a GPS receiver to basically play hide and seek with containers, also known as caches. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, so I'm sorry if you do geocaching and I'm just butchering it. You log that you have been there, and it's kind of like a game. So I mentioned that Libby had been to the bridge previously with her sister Kelsey. It seems when they were there, they had done some geocaching. Christopher Moore is also a geocacher with over 11,000 logged before the murders. But after the murders, he slowed down quite a bit to pretty much nothing. When you cross-reference Kelsey's geocaching with his, you see he has been to every single one she has gone to, and she has gone to two that he actually placed. One geocache was actually right near the Monon High Bridge Trail, and this one was shut down right after the murders happened. I believe it was shut down by law enforcement, and that caused a lot of people to think maybe this theory has some substance to it. The theory is that someone, most likely Christopher Moore, followed the trend of Kelsey's geocaching and somehow planned to get her or the girls at that bridge. Or maybe just anyone who came to geocache in that location. Maybe he was just watching whoever went to the certain one or near the certain one, and he planned for them to be his victim. So the theory I think is most plausible is just the random victim selection. Like I said before, I think this man had been in the area many times in the weeks or even months before the murders, and was planning the area, but not the victims. This theory states that this man was lying in wait somewhere and watched the girls for a while to make sure they were alone. When he saw they were alone, he went after them. If you don't want to hear any crazy speculation, I would suggest you just stop the podcast now, but I am going to go into this kind of crazy internet conspiracy that has to do with screenshots. Now, the screenshots are pretty much non-existent online, but I got them from someone who's had them for a long time. These screenshots say a lot about the case that is unconfirmed and hasn't been released. So none of this could be true. I'm not stating any of this is true. I'm not stating any of this is false. I'm simply giving you the information. I was very hesitant about sharing this, though, because it just seems to have been erased off of many places, and I don't know if I should share it, but like I said in the beginning, in my disclaimer, I am not here to promote theories or anything of that nature. I'm just here to bring you all the information, and this is some information that I found, so I want to bring it to you. Not saying any of this is fact, so just don't put too much trust into this, okay? So, much of this information is from screenshots of a conversation with the man who found the bodies of Abby and Libby on February 14th, 2017. I am unsure if these are even real screenshots. They could have been tampered with. They could be fake screenshots, but I've decided to include them since I like to include all theories. So, this is a fact, actually. Abby's obituary states she died on February 14th, 2017, which is the day the bodies were found, whereas Libby's obituary states she died on February 13th, 2017, the day the girls went missing. Now, this could just be because the parents wanted them to each, like, have their own day. You know, something like that, just something very innocent. But we are going to jump in to another theory. And once again, this is more of a conspiracy than real. A lot of people are asking if this obituary date shows that Abby lived until the next day, or at least quite a bit longer than Libby. Some unconfirmed online reports state that the girls were somewhat staged when found. Abby, like a doll, with her hood up and arms folded. Libby, naked, with her upper half covered in leaves and sticks. Some other unconfirmed online reports state that Libby was in that same position, but Abby looked like she had tried to crawl away. These reports state that when she was found, she was still warm. Some even say that Abby was still alive when she was found, but died of exposure on the way to the hospital. These unconfirmed reports also state that the girls were stabbed. Libby was almost decapitated, and Abby had been stabbed in the neck and heart. These claims would go along with the claims of the girls having scarves on at their open casket funerals. So, morticians generally put scarves on when people are strangled or there's something wrong with their neck. Other than that, there's not a reason for morticians to put scarves on bodies. Some people state that there are pictures of the open caskets online, but I have been unable to find them. I just want to say one more thing with this theory. I might have mentioned it in my last video, but it also might have happened after the last podcast on this case. And I got a comment on Twitter from an account that pretty much looked fake. It was like a new account with like 2 followers or something along those lines. And they just flat out asked me how many times I thought the girls had been stabbed. And my response to that was, the cause of death has not been released yet. And they responded, well, just how many do you think? So that really freaked me out at the time. And now hearing this, like, conspiracy theory makes it freak me out a little more. But I did send that screenshot to Kelsey. She sent it into the police. I also sent it into the police. So they do have the information from that account, if there was any information. This is the end of this episode. This is the end of the theories and the suspects. Like I said, it is just after the 3rd anniversary of Abby and Libby's deaths, and I feel so sorry for the family that they lost these 2 beautiful girls and that justice has not been served yet. I hope 2020 is the year everyone, like, gets the justice they deserve. I think police are close to finding the suspect, even though they have been for quite a while. But maybe this is the year the families will finally get that closure. So let's just hope for that. And I will see you guys next Wednesday. If you want to stay involved with The Great Unsolved, we are on Twitter at Great Unsolved and on Instagram at The Great Unsolved.
This isn't like TV. There's a perception that this can be solved very quickly. Anything that we do can be solved very quickly, but this is a testament that it can't, and we need you. We've needed you since last week. We need you today, and we need you tomorrow. And likely, we'll need the media all across this nation. So from a simple guy like me to you, I say thank you. Libby and Abby need you. Please do not rationalize tips away. Rationalize what you think that might not be important away. By thinking he would never do that to another human being. Or think, what I know doesn't matter. Let folks like the people that are standing behind me with such incredible passion and commitment and dedication to this profession make that determination.